At the far end of the universe, there is a planet ruled by a being of utter evil. And there is only one man who dares challenge him. They are locked in a battle to the death. A battle that will take them across the heavens.
Stop him!
A battle that will finally be fought.
I want them hunted down and brought to me!
Across the face.
Police! Nobody move!
Of Earth.
I think I'm gonna need some backup.
Can you show us the way?
Of course!
No!
From a distant galaxy, they have come to Earth. Dolph Lundgren as He-Man, Frank Langella as Skeletor. Only they have the powers to be. Masters of the Universe, live the adventure.
Come with us now, if you dare. Down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Welcome back, friends, to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast.
That was questionable.
Every Saturday night, the Freak Show happens right down here in a subterranean screening room. This week, we watch Travis's pick...
Masters of the Universe!
Which was made in the year...
I don't know, 86?
And Brett and Tom are here, too, by the way.
Yeah.
Sorry.
This is Tom.
We got right to He-Man.
You went right to Travis and you stopped.
It wasn't even about me. It was about He-Man. Once you look at He-Man, it's like, oh, shit, He-Man.
We got the original four.
That's right. It's a special podcast. Original four. And because Tom missed Thanksgiving, we had a feast. We ate. We're in like a food coma at this point.
Speak for yourself. Did anybody find out what year message?
I think it was 1987. I'm going to go with 87.
I think 87.
I'm sorry.
We're just taking like a random. One of us is probably right.
I feel wonderful. I just want the listeners to know.
I feel great, baby.
And this is directed by Gary Goddard.
Yeah, which we will not say again for the rest of the whole fucking
podcast. Wait, but real quick. Were we trying to figure out if he's related to Drew Goddard?
We don't know. No, no.
Okay. Oh, Drew Goddard, the guy that works with Joss Whedon?
Yeah, the Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's another Goddard.
Who knows?
So there's a Jean-Luc Goddard.
But the reason we will not mention Gary Goddard for the rest of this goddamn podcast is he was named in a Hollywood pedophile sex scandal, and shame on him for working in children's entertainment and taking advantage of the situation.
There you go.
Shame.
Motherfucker.
Shame. We're shaming you.
Don't fucking work on He-Man. Then fucking all those kids look up to you. Then you fucking take it. You're like, oh man, we're casting this Master of the Universe movie.
Shame on you.
I got a great part for you, boy.
Shame on you for making Masters of the Universe.
Well, they try. Yeah, let's, what do we want to...
Well, okay, so there's Masters of the Universe is based on a Mattel toy line that was previously made into a
Filmation cartoon, which is like the last like truly American made cartoon ever, like 100% American made, from the writing to the cell animation to the
from the
whatever.
80s
from the it was early 80s.
I grew up on it.
You can't go back to it though.
No,
that's what, who was saying that? You were saying that, or Travis
was
saying that?
You can't go
You
back
went back
it.
And looked
I,
at
I,
them.
I did go back to it and tried to watch some. Yeah, it was a couple years ago. They came up with like a best of. And I'm like, oh, man, I loved He-Man when I was a kid. Because I had like all the toys. I loved, watched all the cartoons when I was a kid. I went back and watched. And I'm like, wow.
Like, it's like Thomas the Tank Engine. It's for like 4-year-olds.
Yeah,
it really is.
It's like... Prince Adam is really weird.
Prince Adam being weird. We talked about this a little earlier. Like, he's a little foppish. And what that comes from is the original The original idea of the secret identity, I think, comes from Zorro, where Zorro, what the fuck was Zorro's name? Santiago? I can't remember his name. Anyway, he was like the son of a rich guy, and he pretended to be really like, you know, really lazy and spoiled, like a spoiled rich brat. And like, you know, like he, there was all this real shit going on in Mexico. And, yeah. And but he was just this real rich boy and like nobody depended on him, but that was his cover. Well, so he could go out at night as Zorro.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
that's
cover,
really, I mean, that's where the Clark Kent things come from. That's
where you have to have like a strong character who pretends to be a weak character in their secret identity. So you would never guess that this weak person
like, Adam,
is actually,
why? Like, okay, yeah, sure, they look exactly the same. One's got a tan, but no way, Adam's a puss.
So here's a question, though, because, I mean, I remember, I mean, this started as a toy line. Like, some guy came up with, like, put parts together. I remember hearing this story that, like, they were, he put assembled parts from various model kits or whatever and was like, what are we going to call? This is He-Man. Which is like the most retarded name in the world.
Whoa,
right?
Yeah, yeah. He-Man. Me,
well, I mean,
no, I realize that's where this starts. I realize that today. I'm like, He-Man.
No, He-Man's
really?
Great.
That's
it's so fucking. It's like Superman. If you think about it too much, it's like it's so fucking simple. It's stupid, but there's something
he's a
about
He-Man.
It's classic. He's a He-Man,
He-Man
woman hater.
Yeah, He-Man woman hater. He-Man Nazi killer. Something like it. He's all. He's 110%.
110%. Man, that's why there's like an echo in his voice. There's like a natural like. Hello, attorney. You know? I fucking love it.
So they made it as a you know, action figure line. Then they made a cartoon, which was, I remember back in the day, it was like one of those things where like, is this a cartoon or it's like a 30-minute commercial to sell the toys?
It was a 30-minute commercial. Right, so, yeah.
And then at some point, somebody at Canon Films, if we remember the now defunct Canon Films.
Oh, yeah.
Which
they were
run
such
by
films as Superman 4 and what else?
Well, they did. I remember they did, you know, Life Force and Invaders from Mars. Those were like their big, you know,
yeah, just shit.
But they were primarily known, I think, for the Missing in Action movie series and the Death Wish later on. They became like all the Death Wish. Yeah. And anything with like Jean-Claude Van Damme in it, you know, it's like canon, which was these two Israeli guys, Menachem Golan and Globin Yorbis. Golan Yorbis. Menachem Golan and Golan Yorbis, or something like that. Golan Heights.
I just know they're like infamous for like obtaining rights to just high profile and like, oh shit, you know.
And then pooping on them.
Well, just not spending any money. You know, the name is what's going to sell it. It's not how much money they're going to seek into it or the actual product they're going to make. It's just like, oh shit, it's Superman, you know.
Yeah.
We got this fucking, the Salkinds are done with it. Fuck it. Woo. You know, well, I think the Salkinds were done with it at that time. But still, they worked with them.
They didn't do Supergirl. No, they didn't.
No, that was still the Salkinds. Yeah, they still fucked it up.
And Santa Claus, the movie, was the Salkinds.
But look how far we've come.
But yeah,
I mean, today we have Transformers, we have Battleship, we have...
Yeah, it's all about... That's why this was, like, really one of the first, like, cartoons to leak to the screen. I mean, like... In a live action.
Oh, sense. It was explicitly a cartoon prior to this, like not based on a comic book series or something.
Yeah,
like that.
They just went right live actions for.
Where was the Pac-Man? Oh, no, never mind. That was a cartoon too, but.
So wait, help me out here because I don't remember the cartoon that well. Like the movie's nothing like the cartoon. Right?
No, okay. That's the thing that in watching this movie tonight, I'll just preface this by saying like it's I haven't seen the cartoon since I was a kid. I know it was significantly different than this, but so much time has passed. Watching this now, it's like I just threw the cartoon away watching the movie. Because I know in the cartoon, for some reason, He-Man has an alter ego, Prince Adam.
Yeah.
They live on Eternia. There's the Castle Grayskull. He has a sword. When he raises it into the sky and says, I have the power, lightning strikes, and he turns into He-Man. And he's surrounded by a cast of characters.
And he also, like, they don't live at Castle Grayskull. Like,
oh,
this movie feels like they live at Castle Grayskull. But in the cartoon, they have their own little kingdom. Like, Castle Grayskull is, like, some, like, almost like an ancient castle. That's why there's this mystical power of the Castle of Grayskull. Like, whoever fucking wields it's the master of the universe or whatever. So it's like
that's where the lady that you saw,
the sorceress in this, but she was a character in the show.
Yeah, the sorcerer. She had the eagle. She had, like, the eagle hood.
Yeah, she was the only person who actually lived at Castle Grayskull.
Yeah, she lived at Castle Grayskull. She was, like, some weird, like, watcher of the fucking power of Grayskull. And it was always, like Skeletor at Snake Mountain and all his fucking minion dudes wanted to get into Castle Grayskull. And the toy line was actually about how there was actually two halves of a sword.
I remember that.
He-Man had one half, and Skeletor had a half. Okay. It was about joining the two halves together. Yeah. That's why it was actually interesting.
I remember once I glued them things together.
Holy shit, why? But we'll talk about it later, but I am actually surprised how this movie, it's like, the sword does come into play later. Like, he puts the sword in the thing, and it's like, holy fuck.
I have the power.
Like, the movie never really references the fact that he needs the sword, even though he clearly does to become... Right. But anyway... So
So the movie then, right, is like, wait a second, sidebar. While we were watching this, there's a little furry guy in the movie, and I'm like, that must be Snarf. Tom's like, no, Snarf was from Thundercats. Orko was from He-Man. Okay, Orko.
He looked like
a little magician.
Yeah,
he floated.
He had the hoodie.
I think they just figured they couldn't do the special effects for him.
Yeah.
So that was like their little kind of replacement, you know?
Yeah.
He's like He-Man. A new character replacement.
Right, because I don't think there were no toys, I don't think, for Orko. He wasn't a toy line.
Dude, I had the Orko toy.
Was that after the show, right? It was like, here's the original line of action figures. We make a cartoon for the cartoon Orko.
I can't be too sure about that. Maybe for the original cartoon, though.
Yeah.
But the movie did have additional toy characters.
But and there's also
like
whatever
Gweldor
happened to
Gweldor and Blade and
I was wondering how many. I think I had Beastman.
Well, Beastman's an original character. He was the orange guy.
Yeah, I had.
You're like Beastman.
Or maybe like Man in Arms. Oh, where was Manny Faces?
Merman.
Well, that's the problem. The problem with this movie and the problem with most 80s like cartoon movies is like, instead of making, it's like you would assume like, oh, we got this popular line of these popular characters, we can make a movie with these pop. They're like, hey, this is an opportunity to introduce new characters to these kids. Mm. And they always do that. They always want to introduce brand new characters and never use like, oh, I want to see this guy. I want to see that guy. They're like, you get all new guys, new toys to buy, you know?
Yeah. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2.
The characters that were reoccurring were the Sorcerers, He-Man,
Teela,
Man-at-Arms, Beastman,
Skeletor,
Evil-Man.
That's pretty much
it. Merman was fucking regular. Everybody had their season, I think, like Triclops, fucking Trapjaw.
They weren't in the movie.
They're not in the movie.
Yeah, so, I was just mentioning the ones that were in
the movie.
In the movie. From the cartoon.
Well, the movie is like, so it starts, I mean, it like immediately strikes you with like, it's got this Bill Conti score that comes up.
Bill Conti, by the way, sounds like he did Rocky.
It's fucking Rocky.
Yep, and many other things.
It seems like Eternia, and it presents you with a kind of a cool, like, little fantasy world, you know?
No, wait, the score sounds like Superman. That's why I wanted to go with that.
Yeah.
I think
it is Superman with a little bit of Star Wars in there.
For sure. For goddamn sure. But I think it's classic.
And the movie, it seems like, is a mashup of, I mean, it takes, it's basically like watching it now, and I'm like I said, I threw the cartoon away. I'm just watching this, and it's like, we took Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah.
Took him, and so we have a little bit of fantasy, but it's a fantasy world that's got a lot of Star Wars in it.
That's actually, I mean, that is why I love He-Man. To me, He-Man is the last good sword and sorcery idea. You know, it did like a little pinch of technology into it, you know, but
was there technology in the show,
there was technology, but it wasn't like stupid crazy. It still relied on magic and like mysticism. But there was like a lot of the vehicles were like shit, almost like
they had like tanks and
yeah, they had tanks, they had laser guns and whatever. But it was still like really, I mean, it wasn't like so industrialized. The whole world was really rocky and fucking like really like swampy.
But this movie kind of plays out like a lot like, I mean, it reminds you a lot of like, I mean, like at its base, it's like a lot like. It reminds me of like Krull.
Yeah. Yeah, because Krull has that mixture of like Krull technology and mysticism. Yeah.
I mean, it's basically like a Italian fantasy. lots of the Italian fantasy movies, you know.
At the beginning?
At the beginning, yeah.
See, I don't know. I don't...
Let's talk about the beginning. I want to talk about the beginning of this amazing movie. Well, it actually
starts in Eternia. So, like, for a little while, you're sitting there going, like...
No, the very beginning. I want to talk about the very beginning when you see a matte shot of Castle Grayskull. It's the only thing you'll ever get of Castle Grayskull is this fucking painting of it, right? Which is like, all right. Yeah. But, and it has a narration just to get you in the mindset. It's like, we don't have a movie to get you in the mindset.
Yeah.
So let me start this narration to get you in the mindset. And I don't even know what the fuck it says. It just tells you about how, like,
blah, blah, blah. All there's the power, a key in the power, the blah, key blah, blah, blah.
It's like, the power to be invincible. The power to be masters of the universe.
Oh, shit.
Masters of the universe. Ba, 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 ba.
That's awesome. Ba, 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 ba. It is a master. Ba, 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 ba. Yeah, it's like, the universe.
Of the universe. How many movies need to narrate their title more? That's a good...
The title trails. The only difference from Superman is they come, like, from the front of the screen.
And they're, like, crystalline.
And it even does the swoosh sound effect, too. Yeah. Anytime they would do a name, like Dolph Lundgren.
And it even, like, doesn't Superman have the rainbow colors in
no.
the,
yeah.
no, the
rainbow? No. Not in the trails.
No.
It's just blue. The space. Yeah. And then it shows the, it's just like a echoing of the crystal titles. Yeah. It comes up, stops, and flies off for a second.
But we know that, like, Castle Grayskull, because it has this power, is sought after by two factions on the planet of Eternia. And one of them has just taken over as the movie starts, and that's the faction led by Skeletor.
Fucking Skeletor!
Who storms in. So there's this throne room set, which is kind of impressive. This is what
it's
actually...
It's pretty impressive.
But it struck me, it was like, is this like the same room that they used in Dune? But I don't know. But Dune, it was like, that was the, you know, the style of design. These stormtroopers in black, armor march in, and this
costume... The stormtroopers were the design,
you know,
of Dune?
No. But right, I mean, this is what I read, you know, into this when I'm watching. I'm like, oh, okay, you got stormtroopers. Here comes Darth Vader because he's got a big flowing coat.
Oh, it's the beginning of Jedi.
And it's like, oh, yeah. It's Skeletor. Yeah. Storming, marching in and right. taking the throne
room.
And
he's on purpose with, like, his canes, like.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. I mean, because everybody loves fucking Skeletor's goddamn, like, weird.
Yeah.
Like,
goat-headed cane. Yeah, yeah, that's pretty sweet.
It's fucking cool.
Yeah, from his first moment on screen, you know, this is the character that you want to watch.
Yeah.
You know, right. Like, this guy makes the film.
This is Frank Langella, who played Dracula in the 1979 Dracula.
Yeah.
He's like, I mean, I was saying outside, it's like, this is one of those parts where, you know, it's like, yeah, okay, whatever. This guy, like, was like, I'm hired, and it's a part, and I'm going to, like, I'm totally taking advantage of this. Mm-hmm. It has to be awesome for an actor when you can play, like, a very uncomplicated character, right? I mean, his lines are not, it's just, you just relish the, like, I'm the most evil motherfucker in the world.
I'll destroy you!
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to hold back, right? Because there's nothing to hold back for. There's nothing. I'm like, who is this guy? Wait, it doesn't matter. He's just evil incarnate.
He just wants power.
And he just wants power.
And, the
everybody
reason,
to worship him.
Yeah.
And it's like, and as much as we'll rip on this movie throughout the podcast, but, like, okay, one of the things that I want to say, what really sets this movie apart for me is, okay, I watched He-Man my whole life, right? My whole life. And it's always been Skeletor's like, ah, you bumbling fool. You know, it's like he's fucked up everything.
Like, wasn't Skeletor voiced by the guy who did Starscream? Like the fucking...
You'll have to look that up. I have no idea. But like all these 80s cartoon guys like Shredder and Cobra Commander and Skeletor, they were always like, they always were... shown as a threat, but they never proved it in any episode, like at any point in time. So to me, a movie where Skeletor starts off by, holy fuck, we took over Grayskull. Like, we won. I mean, the movie starts off with them fucking winning. I'm right, like, yeah. That's how you do it. I mean, that's how you fucking do it. That's how you wake up the audience. And you're like, that's right, people. This isn't, you know.
You know what it feels like? And I hate to say this because it might open a can of worms, but... It's a good thing for you. It feels like the beginning of Man of Steel. Like you're just coming in at the end of another film. You know?
For sure.
And it's like, now, how are we going to get this back?
And that's also another thing I like, is this movie treats an audience, it treats a fucking 4-year-old audience like it's intelligent.
Yeah.
You know the show, here's the movie. The show never had a lot of continuity in the first place, so there really was no origin. That's probably why they decided not to do the secret identity, because the show never showed how he got the power of Grayskull or whatever the fuck. Mm-hmm. So that would have to be the movie. That would have to be the topic of the movie if they were going to do the dual identity. So they're like, fuck it. He's He-Man. You know, he's going to be He-Man because they're in a war. It's the end of a war. So he's already, I have the power and the fucking He-Man and all that jazz. Or whatever. Maybe this is a universe where he's not even Prince Adam. I mean, you don't even see King Randor. You don't see King Randor. Like I said, there's King Randor, King and Queen Randor, or whatever the fuck they're, I think it's Randor from the show, which are Prince Adam's parents. You don't even see them. They're not even mentioned.
Yeah. Because there's no Prince Adam in the movie. He's just He-Man in a cape.
Fucking right. He-Man.
And the impression that I got was that, okay, there's been a war going on. So, like, Skeletor is obsessed with He-Man. Like, He-Man's his arch enemy. He believes that he's the equal, you know, like the positive equal to his negative, you know, whatever energy.
Yeah.
And that He-Man's the only one who could fuck up his plan. So we must kill He-Man. I want He-Man dead. Kill He-Man. Like, there's parts in this movie where it's like,
you'll make him a martyr. I want him bowing before me.
But there's parts in this movie where, like, He-Man is not a threat to Skeletor at all. He's been banished to whatever, you know, whatever happens in the plot. And it's like, you can let this go, dude. Nope. Yeah, I have to get He-Man. I'm going to go after him myself. But that comes later.
If He-Man's out there, it's the paranoid mindset. Yeah. If my enemy is out there at all, that's what got Nixon. If my enemy is out there whatsoever in any shape or form, I have to go after him or else he might come and get me.
Yeah, yeah.
He might come back and get me.
That's clearly Skeletor's like frame of mind. So, I mean, we're introduced to He-Man, played by Dolph Lundgren. So this is like this. Right after he did Rocky IV, right?
I am so upset right now.
I'm very
thank
happy.
Thank you so much that you're alive.
His English is still not all that great, and he's got an accent. He does. I like the way that he plays He-Man. Like, he smiles a lot. Yeah. You know, for like this fearsome warrior that he's supposed to be.
He's always a friendly warrior.
He's very friendly. He's always smiling.
Yeah.
You know? But I don't know anything about that character. I was sitting there. I'm like, who is this guy and why is he in this movie? Because everybody treats him like, it's He-Man. You know, it's like, He-Man, we have to do this. He-Man. And it's the characters relating to him makes it seem like he's something. He doesn't do anything. He gets into a sword fight at the very end of the movie.
Yeah, he doesn't even...
He saves Gwildor. Like, at the beginning of the movie, he flies off all the stormtroopers. And then, we're just going to call them stormtroopers. And he does a lot. It's just the idea that, well, I mean, He-Man in the show wasn't a lot. Really, I mean, he held the fucking sword, said, I have the power. Like I said, this is, the adaptation, like I said, it's a 4-year-old movie. So, like, really, it's like, I think one of our comments later is going to talk about how bad of an adaptation. It's like, really? Bad adaptation? Look at it.
The source material's pretty damn bad.
Yeah, that's why I like how when, we're going to get deeper into this, but,
just do it, man.
Just we're going to barrel through, like, I have to tell some of the story. So He-Man, like, rescues Gwildor from Theodore, this little short guy that's replacing Orko, because they don't have any idea.
It's Billy Barty from Willow. And
they know they can't introduce Orko as a new type of character, because the kids, the 4-year-old audience, would be like, that ain't fucking Orko. Orko ain't no fucking locksmith.
Plus, he's probably an expensive special
effect. And probably special effects to make him a wizard or whatever. But, so he's a weird locksmith that created a thing called the Cosmic Key that uses tones to unlock multiverses, which I think is a fucking awesome idea, by the way.
Stolen from Close Encounters of the Third
Kind. That is not. That's communication through tones. That's what I'm saying, guys. Illuminati. But the tone all these itself. Filmmakers know the same shit. They know we're all a vibration operating just on this, like, whatever, on different levels. And
but even when the kids like
colors, it's things like color. I've always liked the idea, but like I said, that doesn't belong to any.
Right,
that's not a fucking movie idea. Right.
It's okay. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, this key operates on musical frequencies or whatever to open a gate anywhere in the cosmos.
Anywhere in a thousand cosmos, a thousand galaxies.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's gonna work again.
So when the good guys are in jeopardy, They open a cosmic gate and they go through its escape.
They find
and
out they that's how Skeletor got into right. Which is another way I like, because they're like, okay, all these fucking kids have seen all these episodes of He-Man, and Skeletor is like, I can't get in there, you know. But then, like, you find out, okay, by using this cosmic key, that's how he was able to just teleport himself right into fucking inside of Grayskull.
Right. And brilliant. Took the castle.
Fucking yeah. Brilliant.
But when our good guys try to use this to escape, or I think maybe, are they...
No, they go into Grayskull because they're going to rescue the sorceress.
Right.
And they get overrun.
And so they escape through a
gate. Well,
it's a
trap, right? They know. They know they're going
to... And they end up on the planet Earth. Now, at this point, I remember...
Hold on. I want to get... I'm going to dissect this movie a little bit.
Okay.
Just a little.
All right.
Just about some of the acting choices.
The floor is yours.
When they get into Grayskull, and you know, they obviously know it's a fucking trap because Skeletor wants them to come after the sorceress, because obviously Skeletor needs He-Man, even though they don't say I need a sword. They just they want the cosmic key because there can't be another one or whatever the fuck. Well, they don't even know what that is at this point, actually. But when Skeletor comes in, he says the awesome line about all things come to those who wait. He's been waiting for He-Man. It's like, and yeah, this is like, I'm geeking out right now about this because I like this movie and I like He-Man. And this is the closest an adult can actually get to He-Man in a weird way. You know, even though there's the cartoon, there's the character designs. Yeah, yeah. I just ordered a book called The Art of Masters of the Universe, all the old paintings of the car designs and shit like that, just because... It's for kids. You can't get there.
Yeah.
But characters are. And when Skeletor like threatens the sorceress, and the actor that plays Man-at-Arms, he goes, "You dare threaten her life the way a fucking military man like tears up when you threaten his patriot, his like his whatever, his
matriarch or whatever,
or his patriot, whatever, what
his flag,
or something like that. I was like, his patriarchy? What is, that's not a word.
Well, a woman's a matriarch. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, fucking stupid. But yeah. So I was like, dude, that's brilliant. To me, that's a brilliant acting choice. The guy like had a little quiver in his voice, a little teary eye that you are threatening like this blind fucking like nationalist idea towards his sorceress or whatever, right? And that's like the little things in this movie that make this movie to me. It's like, yeah, there's all this stupid shit, but I think all these actors fucking brought it with like, oh, dude, they're threatening like, you're death, right? You know? I fucking love that scene. And then, of course, they got to jet out of there. I like Gwildor's little saying about, I don't like adventures. It's, even though it's a very like Bilbo Baggins,
yeah, because they're going on an on a fantasy adventure. They casting mentioned early on. We meet Evelyn, is played by Meg Foster from They Live, which we just watched, and Leviathan and Lords of Salem, and Chelsea Field plays Teela, and she was the wife in The Last Boy Scout. Boom. Man-at-Arms, I recognize.
Oh yeah, that's right. You said that.
I wasn't sure what I've seen him in, but they end up. On Earth. And so I remember watching this, right? The first time around, you know, you're expecting Masters of the Universe, and this is where you have that adaptation of, like, your source material, and you're like, you know, when in the fuck did they ever go to Earth? So this is the new thing in the movie. They go to Earth, and then it's like, oh, I was kind of hoping to see this, like, epic fantasy space adventure, but now we're in California, and in a movie that
they
takes
don't
place
got the budget.
Basically in a record shop, in an alley, in a high school, and
in your imagination, man. It's across dimensions. What are you talking about?
And a street. Yeah, a street.
Yeah, but see, the thing is
and there
they
are no people
who
live
budget,
in this world.
Those old Italian fantasy movies pulled off. Why didn't they just go out to the deserts of California and just...
Right.
The thing is, I don't even think it's about that what it is. It's the stupid mentality. I mean, this is why even when they do have the budget with movies like The Smurfs, they leave their fantasy world to enter New York. That way they think... they think an audience can't relate to a fantasy world. They think an audience can't relate to an alien world.
But what the hell? I mean, well, like... Well,
I know, is that fucking weird?
But they're riffing on Star Wars.
Well,
I mean,
but I
Dune
think this,
happened.
This is budgetary, I believe. I do.
Because they can only build the throne room, and they can't build anything else.
Yeah, I think in the fucking 80s...
I think there's three things going on. It's budget. Tori, there's also it's the 80s and the fact that like you got to have a high school, you got to have a record store.
We just got to have Earth
have
kids.
Two
you got to have Earth
kids teenagers.
That understand what's going on in Eternia, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You, the audience, it's the Robin to the Batman. You, the audience, have to be with He-Man.
Yeah.
you know, the fucking Jimmy Olsen to the Superman. Or
and the third thing, I guess, there's only two, because the third thing I thought it was going to be is that it's a fish out of water story, but they never go there.
Right.
Like, which would have been funny. You know, you'd have your Thor moment.
There was, the only moment was they had to find food and they robbed, like, the KFC or whatever.
And yeah. Like, and they're, yeah. Oh, this is animal. Oh.
I love that scene. She's like, why do they put the meat on these little white sticks? And Man in Arms goes, those are rib bones.
And she's like, what, this used to be an animal?
Those are rib bones.
Yeah, what a barbaric plan. I go, never think when you're hungry. I love Man in Arms in this movie. Just because, what a like militaristic. Like, even though obviously they live in a planet, where supposedly this planet, Eternia, doesn't eat any living things, right?
I guess
not. I mean, they are today's world, right? Where you put like put anthropomorphic feelings on living things, you don't want to eat it.
In Eternia,
like,
they've got Cringer.
Well, and not Battle this Cat. Fucking movie though. Don't true. Bring it up to the audience.
They've got like Cringer, thinking, talking animals, so they wouldn't eat them.
Battle Cat. Oh,
but I like how at least Man-At-Arms.
I remember that.
I know, missed Battle opportunity.
Cat. Missed opportunity. Fuck, they're like, we can't afford that.
They need a George Lucas this film and put in Battle Cat.
They need a Battle Cat.
Oh my god, yeah, trust me. So, I just think it's funny how at least he maintains like a militaristic identity. That's like, if you're fucking hungry, you eat what you eat.
Which raises the question, has he been to Earth before? Because he has like carnal knowledge on this.
He's just a war dude, man.
Like, no, maybe through military, food, maybe
he's a carnal now. He's been fucking these
it looks
animals.
Like chicken, dude. It looks like ribs.
No, you saw the couple there. I like when she's like, look there, and there's the couple kissing. He's like, I was doing that before you were born.
Yeah.
He's just old. That's his thing. He's old.
He's wise.
Maybe there's like an older Eternia. Maybe Eternia used to like eat animals and like, you know, I mean, he said, I like, he's like, whatever, I forget whatever conflict he said, 30 days without rations or whatever.
Yeah, those little things are kind of, I mean, that's like flavor, you know, character little bits.
Yeah.
Little bits, but they're there.
And I think sometimes I think that's all you really need. I really do. Because sometimes
He-Man doesn't have any of those.
That's true. He-Man doesn't. But maybe they're on the cutting room floor. Maybe they weren't in English.
Right. That's what I was thinking, too. I'm like, did they just cut most of Dolph Lundgren's lines out of this movie? Which maybe the.
But I don't know. He did pretty good when, like, he saves Cottony Court. Well,
Courtney Cox.
Cottony Court.
Cottony Corks.
Jesus.
Who's very beautiful in this movie. Oh, Pre-Friends.
Very young.
Post Dancing in the Dark music video.
But like, I mean,
Misfits of Science, anyone?
He's got like dialogue with her. Sounds good.
But okay, let's talk about dialogue. Could there have been at least one line of dialogue saying how like, oh, these what do they call them? The natives look exactly like us. Isn't that kind of strange?
We can breathe their air. Not a problem.
If we went to another planet,
I don't think
planet,
we're supposed to think about
and
it.
And even like the Earth kids weren't like, what are you doing dressed like half naked running around with swords and laser guns?
Yep, it's
like,
just all accepted.
Well, but
it's
they were like, getting attacked right away because, Courtney Cox and her boyfriend, like she's like the subplot to this movie is she's leaving town because her parents died in a plane crash. She just needs a change. And they go to the cemetery where they find the cosmic key, which got dislodged from a grappling hook, which I want to fucking mention. Like, to me personally, like, growing up with He-Man, and, like, everything in this movie doesn't look like He-Man, but that grappling hook is one of those things, like, oh my god, that looks exactly like something from a He-Man universe. There's just the design of that grappling hook looks like out of the fucking Motu goddamn universe.
It looks like the vending machine game where you try and win a stuffed animal.
Yeah, a little claw.
Like, Motu is masters of the universe.
For all the toy nerds that need to shorten things like TMNT and Motu and like
Motu.
And her boyfriend is played by Robert Duncan McNeil, who would later go on to be Tom Paris in Star Trek Voyager. It was just weird because I've seen like a lot of that show and seeing him young running around like as the lead, basically. I mean, he's the human. He and Courtney Cox are your avatars into this movie.
Yeah.
The, you know, you're supposed to be seeing all this weird shit from their
perspective. Get out. Get out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When he's attacked by Beast Man and, yeah. Get out! Get out! Yeah. What do you want from me?
So they find the cosmic key, and by activating it, like He-Man or Skeletor can locate them, and so they send mercenaries who, like, what we know as, like, in the Masters of the Universe cartoon, Skeletor would just work with these different fucking monster men, merman, da, 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 da. But in this, they're seen as like mercenaries that are for hire. Mm. You know, it's a whole new cast of fucking.
What'd you think of the makeup designs on those? I mean, because you know,
I really when I was a kid, I really liked like the lizard. I forget what his name is, Scourge. Or yeah, some the shit throat. Like that. Yeah, yeah, he's got like the little air bladder, cool. Like yeah. The throat, yeah. Whatever.
Beastman was all right. The guy, right. Whatever, Blade, I thought that was like, well, maybe he was like really a bald weren't even guy. Trying.
Yeah.
People yeah. Seem to really like Blade, though. He's the one that like everybody really seemed to like.
Yeah. Because
he's got swords. He's got a sword. And he's got two swords.
He's the only one who speaks. The other ones are all.
Praying or what's his name? Yeah. King?
The guy with the big fake hair.
He's got like a mullet. Big white fucking like.
A white mullet.
Like, yeah.
That kind of moves independently of
it's
his
like
head.
Yeah, Hook Peg arm. Bundy's fucking like
Blade or Krang. Yeah. Or
Krang.
Oh. No, his name's like Kang or some Kang. Shit. But I thought he's a cool character. He's like a, he's just like a gray thing. He's got like a cool voice though. He's got that.
See, I cool. Hated like. Hey, like,
don't use that word. Hates a strong word.
Like, I did not like the makeup on Skeletor.
Oh, you're fucking insane.
That bothered me the most. You're insane. Man. It bothered me the most.
How? Why?
Right
it?
Now, Google Red Skull from Captain America.
I know.
I'm telling you, that looks like a fucking Halloween costume. This looked like a Skeletor. It was awesome.
I mean, like, I had the Skeletor toy. Like, Skeletor was one of my favorite dudes. It just didn't look like a skull to me.
Because the Skeletor toy, all the drawing, he's got like black, I think, eyes. Like the eye sockets are empty.
He's like a yellow skull yeah. Sitting in a black hood.
Isn't that purple this? Skull?
No, it's a yellow skull yellow? With a purple hood. It's a purple. He's got, like, he's got purple clothes. In the purple. In the cartoon, he's got like blue. He's got actually got blue flesh. He's got blue flesh.
Oh, it's
and he's
flesh.
Like, I mean, he's got normal skin and fucking super roided out like all the other guys.
And the exact same torso as He-Man.
Yeah, yeah, the same one. You just interchange
battle damage.
Oh, I had the battle damage.
Yeah, battle damage. Yeah.
But fuck you. This makeup job is awesome, Skeletor. Awesome. Like inspired me like beyond. Like still does to this day. Like when I saw, like I said, when I saw Captain America and I saw the Red Skull, I'm like, what the fuck. In 1987, his Skeletor looked way better. I mean, it looks like a skull. It looks like someone's skin that is so thin.
It is kind of cool how expressive the actor can still be while wearing the prosthetic.
Yeah, and you
because you mostly see his eyes. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, you see his eyes inset within the, you know, the sockets.
Yeah.
Which is a departure from the design of the original, you know, Skeletor. So there's that. He's got fangs that I don't think the original Skeletor had. And it's a, you know, it's a prosthetic that's built out on his face and gives him like the, you know.
Yeah.
But, and the close-ups, you know, because we're watching it on Blu-ray today, you know, you can see the in his nostrils, which is supposed to be empty, there's, you know, the black,
like black marker.
Yeah, the screens or whatever in there. Yeah, to, you know. And the face, you know, the nose moves with, you know, the expressive face, which is like, okay, that's not a skull, but, you know. I mean, I get what they're doing. It didn't bother me. You know,
I'm still saying,
like, it's a guy who's supposed to be a skull.
I'm just saying, compare it to fucking modern day Red Skull, and this wins out. I swear.
I kept waiting for him. Seriously, I was waiting for the line, because he was always like, this is an, I'm a man who does this. I was waiting for him to be like, but I'm not a man, you know, because he's a Skeletor. I mean, he's a guy with the fucking skin on his face.
No, but he's also like kind of a sorcerer guy. So we're to believe maybe he was a man and that his face just got disfigured.
Yeah, he keeps
it's going. The power of evil like has sucked the file.
I liked what you said.
Like, let's not think about it.
While we were watching it, Travis, you said that like it was like a man that had skin so thin that you could see his skull.
It's almost like a skin so thin you could see his fucking skull.
That's creepy.
It's creepy. That, it's fucking ah,
like a translucent. Almost fish-like skin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I get behind something like that. That's good. That's scary.
That's scary. Yeah. And so, okay, so they got to fucking track these goddamn... I mean, the story's not that interesting. I mean, whatever. Oh, we lost the fucking key. We, you know...
We're going to take it to the record store. Oh. The guy who finds it thinks it's a synthesizer,
which is funny.
We got to take it to the record store to find out, is it a synthesizer?
Charlie's eating pizza because it's the 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
And
the fact that they have to take it to a record store because it's the 80s. Like that.
Right. You know, like, or no, it wasn't a record store, was it?
No, it was a music store.
It was a music store. Like a guitar center or whatever.
And I think it may have been like a pawn shop because they're like, man, I wonder what I could get.
Well, all music stores are like kind of buy, all sell like used instruments.
But
I just, like I said, I kind of like how it uses the music angle. It's just kind of, I don't know, it's one of those things where I guess if you think of 80s cartoons, I suppose, characters always have like, well, this is your hobby, or this is how you express yourself, you know, because you're kind of trying to teach kids how to either different ways of expressing themselves or positive ways of expressing themselves or whatever. So the idea that they added like a musical character that can work with, because like the Eternians, they only know, oh, you use the tones to open the multiverse or whatever the fuck. But, you know, when they find out, like, oh, shit, you know, you're a music maker? Oh, my God. You know, where, you know,
you must be a master. He's another master of the universe.
And he just assumes, oh, shit, well, anybody could do this. But it's like, well, you don't know. You know, your own interpretation of something could matter, you know, independently. You know, so I don't know. It's got kind of that, I mean, I'm sure they could have worded it all. I think I fucking worded it better than they did. So it's not really interesting, but it's just got a lot of, like, you know, cool flying around jets and like.
Well, there's a lot of puppy love stuff going on here with, you know, the two human characters that you were kind of unexpected that they're in this movie. Yeah. It's like, because they got like this little drama going on.
It's sad at the very beginning because, like, I imagine the whole, like, you know, this guy's going to fucking drop his girlfriend off at a fucking airplane. Her parents died, and she's like, I got to forget you. I got to forget this town. I got to forget everything that could possibly remind me of my parents.
Yeah.
So even though I love you, and then she's got that friend that's like, you want a word of advice? You are going to regret. You know, dumping this awesome guy. Like, I don't know, he must be like the best musician in the high school or something like that.
He did play the night before.
Yeah, at Club Zero.
Yeah.
The best Club Zero.
So that, to me, that is kind of a really fucking sad opening for a cast of characters, right? That it's like, dude, you know.
Well, it sets up
this girl you fucking love is just going to leave you, even though she loves you. And that's the saddest sort of thing. You know, it's kind of better. It's like, I hate you. I want to leave. But when you, like, both love each other, it's like, I gotta leave for fucking try to forget shit, you know?
Yeah.
Sad, man.
They eventually get split up, and then, of course, then that's when the bad guys show up.
Yeah, they come up to the fucking high school.
Well, this gives an opportunity to inject another character into this menagerie, and it's fucking James Tolkien, who you will probably
Strickland.
Strickland from the Back to the Future movie. Who, that guy is another guy who, like, I think...
authority figure.
Yeah, but he comes off, you know, like, as an actor, like, I totally know that this is, you know, whatever. This is something that the kids are into, and I'm doing it. But he's, like, very expressive, so he's always wiping his nose and doing, really, you know, I mean, he's very rubbing enthusiastic. And,
like, stealing the show.
He's always pointing the finger and, like... Yeah. He's always pushing actors into position, too. He grabs him by the arm and, like, places him. But, like, you're going to tell me what you got this. And you're going to do this. Fucking awesome, man. He's the man. Which I want to comment on the, like, four attorney mercenaries going after the one high school girl. Like, I keep thinking about this. Like, God damn, what kind of mercenaries?
They can't pull it off.
But what if Masters of the Universe is like a cartoon world? And, like, they are as buffoonish as they are in the cartoon.
It certainly comes off that
so
way.
In On Earth, they still can't fucking kill. Like, yeah, He-Man can fight them and, like, la la, but they can't match a human girl. Yeah. Because they're cartoons. They don't
Come back to their boss and be like, oh, we were outnumbered. And when she finds out.
Oh, they lie. That was, like, awesome, too.
You were outnumbered? Really? Really?
That's a good fucking, that's a good, like, He-Man villain trait to me, is returning to Skeletor and, like, coming up with a fucking, like, just like, the Eternians outnumber. We thought it better to escape with our lives and come back with better forces. You know, that's awesome.
Is that when he has the line? I'm not in the giving vein.
Yeah, he says, give us another chance. And he goes, I'm not in the giving vein this day. And he fucking electrocutes Sauron, my favorite fucking lizard guy. I was like, God damn it.
Yeah.
Like, could've taken very care much of the guy like that made Palpatine. The comment.
Yeah, yeah, right. Is that brilliant like, or is that
no?
Like, it's force lightning. He uses force lightning.
It's not force. He's a fucking sorcerer, guys.
But you take out the other one to show the guy that made the comment. Be like, this is what.
Yeah,
happens.
But that makes me mad because I like the lizard guy.
Yeah, Blade, me too. Yeah, yeah,
Blade required no makeup, so they're like, get rid of him. Yeah, get rid of the makeup guy. We can't afford that shit. Air bladder.
Yeah,
but Evil Lynn, he's like. Evil Lynn says something about how, like, well, if we do this, we can whatever. And he's like, good, when you return with the Eternians. And she's like, I was not suggesting that I go. And he says, then you should not have spoken. Fucking brilliant, dude. I swear to God, everything he says in this movie is just like, oh, man.
Oh, it's the best.
Fucking well,
at some point, Brent was actually like, so as we were watching it, he's like, this guy's in a much more dramatic movie than everybody else in this movie.
He really was.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
He's kind of, it reminds me of what the Sheriff of Nottingham and remember Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves?
Oh, yeah.
Where it's
yeah,
like,
yeah,
this guy's not in the same movie that everybody else is in.
And
his movie is better than the one that we're watching.
Yeah, I want to see more of his film. I'm stuck in this 80s teeny bopper movie. I want to go to this film.
Yo, he was great, man, because he's Skeletor, dude. He's fucking Skeletor. I mean, the guy... My favorite line he has in this whole movie, he might be jumping ahead a little bit, but whatever, we're all over the map, I guess, is when he does get He-Man. I mean, I guess it doesn't fucking matter, right? I mean, it's fucking bullshit. But I like how you can get He-Man by, like, you know, not another step of your friends will get, you know, you just gotta threaten your friends, right? Once again, kind of, it's like solidifying, like, a social statement to, like, kids, like, you gotta find a knit group of friends that will help you out through any situation, and don't betray them.
Yeah,
because those people will help you later as long as you, you know, whatever, stay true and do.
And I always like the idea of like two groups of friends coming together and like instantly bonding and working together because like you know you have.
The
Snarf, and then, you know...
Yeah, the Eternians.
Will Dar.
Well, okay, yeah, thank you. But you have the Eternians, and then also you have the Earthlings, and you have, like, the record store guy, and they all come together, and then they're, you know, all fighting the common evil.
Yeah, I like how Strickland...
Yeah. Yeah.
What are we calling him? Strickland?
Strickland. What was his name? Nobody knows. He's the guy who cocks his gun.
They're killing each other out there.
he's very enthusiastic. In this movie, okay, this is what I remembered. Like, this is one of those things that stuck with me for 20-some years. 30 years? So almost 30 years. Because I haven't seen this since, like, 1987, right? And I remember at the time going, like, this guy gets, at some point he gets a shotgun from the record store guy.
Yeah, from Charlie.
And runs out. He's a cop. He should be able to have access to his own fucking arsenal.
Yeah.
But he ends up running, you know, getting the shotgun. And every scene, he punctuates.
It's not every scene. He does it four times. He does it four times.
I think
times.
It was like six.
It's four.
It's
we counted. There was four
it
times.
Was over
it's four.
Four
or five.
No, I think
four.
It's five. God damn
it.
Five.
What the fuck, people?
Five.
I just
he's
said
like,
it.
Okay,
it's
we're gonna go get these guys.
He picks up the gun and cocks it.
Yeah.
He runs outside and cocks it. And then he gets these other cops, and he's like, I'm telling you, it was a battlefield out here, or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
And then
and they're over here.
Yeah, my impression of him starting to turn into a Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Oh, it was crazy. And then he cocks it four times. He cocks it, like, when he
no,
sees
no, there was
the,
another one that you missed that you're
I'm
like,
not,
wait, did
no.
he cock it? Or like, yep, he cocked it.
Yeah,
I was telling you four times.
And then,
anyway.
I mean, then he starts blasting, and he's cocking. But
well, because once they actually get over to Eternia...
But his character is really kind of sad if you think about it, because, I mean, he has nothing else going on.
He makes out the best.
He's investigating
an
arson. There was a fire at the school, and he's like, I gotta know what's going on over here. I got an arsonist. I got this guy. You're telling me this.
So he goes and hangs out with a teenage boy at his house.
Yeah, he distrusts him. He knows.
He's like, oh, I gotta get to the
bottom
of this.
Well, because he knows that guy, well, I mean, really, he's a lead. Because he knows... I mean, that guy went there looking for his girlfriend. He's like, you know something that way on in here? You know, you're going to come with me, kid.
Yeah.
I like this character. I really do. Like, he seems really bizarre, but like, I really buy into him.
He's bizarre.
Because he just holds on to him. He's like, you know something that happened with this fire? Come here. You know, your girlfriend's missing. You know, I
like the character too, but like, as far as I've never seen another detective that follows the kid home. And, like, you know, like, we're going to get to the bottom of this. I'm not letting you out of my sight until I figure out what this thing is.
At some point, you're going to do something that's going to reveal something. And until then, we're just going
to
hang out.
No, they're trying to find the girl.
Right.
They're trying to find Julie because they know that, like, she was supposed to be there. She must have seen something. She knows who set fire to the school. You know,
I'm just saying, usually they go back to,
really, he's supposed to be dropping the kid off and still, like, kind of like, I don't know, even getting information on Julie. Like, they're going to check if Julie maybe just went home. Like, maybe she ran from the school and went home.
Yeah.
And Julie calls, and she's like, oh, there's, you know, she gives fucking her boyfriend the lowdown. Like, oh, these dudes from another universe have the little, you know, they want that thing that we got. And
well, I don't know if I should go here now, but since we're talking about it, the idea that this character, like, Tom says he makes out the best, and he does. In a certain sense, at the end of the film, he ends up on Eternia with, you know, as many girls as he wants or whatever.
Because he was a true warrior.
Right. But also the same, like, if you think about it, he has nothing to go home to.
Right.
Like, there's no reason for him to go back. And that's kind of sad.
Well, we don't even know that. He could have a wife. He could have, like, kids. We don't know at all.
If he does, he doesn't want to.
Eternia.
Which is also sad because he doesn't want to go back.
But I think that's actually awesome because I think that's why he's so hardcore. Because, like, okay, the way I see it, Eternia... Dude, Eternia is this fucking battle-hard planet, dude. It's constantly at war between good and fucking evil. There is no gray side. There's 100... That's why what I was trying to say earlier, I don't even think I got around to it, but my favorite line in this is when Skeletor has He-Man captive, and he asks He-Man, tell me, is the loneliness of good is equal to the loneliness of evil? And it's just like talking about... Being a fundamentalist, in either way, you're completely cutting yourself off to a majority of the fucking world, you know? So I think of Eternia as this really fucking battle-hardened planet. And this detective guy who's so fucking high speed, you know, he's not supposed to exist in our fucking world because we don't live in that world, right? He goes to Eternia. He actually has a place there. He is
blows
a, fucking,
a bunch of dudes away.
Yeah,
he's like, oh, fuck it. And he just...
No one takes a pot shot or whatever. No one takes a pot shot at Striper or whatever.
That was actually kind of funny because, like, his character basically goes through, from what I saw... Was like, well, someone please tell me what the hell is going on here. What is going on? This is crazy. What's going on?
I want your kid to tell me.
It's like, we're here. What? Wait, those are the bad guys? Bam, 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 you know?
Well, that was only until they shot at him. Because originally, like, I mean, think of his mindset. I love when he's at the music store, then the attorney is walking and goes, something tells me I've been looking for you all night. That's a fucking great line. Yeah. But he almost thinks it's like a turf war between these two I mean, imagine the Warriors or something, right?
Yeah.
So imagine this detective's mindset. He's not thinking about these dimensional blah, blah. Right, he's thinking of like,
he sees
oh my God,
kind of
these
cult,
two gangs are dressed up like crazy fuckholes and killing each other or whatever. So at first he's really kind of neutral to the situation. He's just trying to take command of the situation, right? And then he, you know, once he gets to Eternia and someone shoots at him... But before we even get there, I want to talk about how earlier in the movie when they track the cosmic key to Julie's house where Kevin is right after the detective leaves with the key and they put the collar on him, it shows Kang or whatever the fuck his name is pick up like a clipping, a newspaper clipping about her parents dying in a plane crash. Like, oh, this has some fucking relevance, right? And Evil Lynn does say, like, this could prove useful. But then later when there's the big scene at the music shop, Evil Lynn does use that to pretend that she is Courtney Cox's mother.
Yeah.
And I gotta fucking say, man, like,
it's gut-wrenching.
The more I think about it, like, it's one of those things where if you want to really think about reality, you're like, oh, God, who the fuck, if you know your mom's dead. And you're dealing with this war, in this music shop, and you're at the back of the room. All of a sudden, you see your dead mother, and she's like, hey, come here and talk to me for a second. You know, yeah, everything should be being like that. I mean, you wouldn't even do that. But this is why I think this is a better scene to explain sorcery magic than almost anything I've seen in a Lord of the Rings movie where they just throw a fucking light ball at one another or whatever. Because it's actually getting into a character's fucking head, making them step out of reality and being like, hey, I'm your mother. You know, I'm not dead. I've, you know, we've been actually fighting this war looking for this key all along. I'm sorry we had to keep a secret. But I like how it's almost like a moment at a time. I mean, there's a fight going on in front of the store. Kevin and the cop are fighting over a gun or whatever the fuck in the store. And she, like, literally takes a second to fucking Evelyn steps into her fucking mind and, like, lets her play out this whole scenario of I'm your fucking mother alive. I just think that scene's awesome. I was like, holy fuck, that's magic. That's getting into your head, creating a different dimension for who knows how many seconds just to get the key to Evelyn, you know? Mm. I think that's fucking brilliant, dude.
Yeah, I agree.
Brilliant!
I agree.
Yeah, and if you don't think so, I hope I convince.
There's eventually, like, a full-fledged invasion where Skeletor comes and is floating, what do you call it?
It was a float. Yeah, it was a float. Like, I mean, they filmed it right at ground level, so you didn't see the bottom. It's like, dun, dun, dun,
right.
dun, dun, dun. This on a street where there's like the Empire Mart.
Did anyone else think, because the first thing you see that come out of the portal are these, you know, the stormtroopers.
Yeah, right? They're, like, walking there.
On the flying
files.
Thing. Well, no,
a couple dudes.
Oh, yeah, they're Centurions.
Yeah.
They're called Air Centurions.
Flying in, did anyone else think Avengers at that point, you know, when the guys on the aliens that come down
and talking about
out of the portal.
It didn't occur to me.
I was almost thinking Flash Gordon. Remember how the Hawkman had
it's
just a sci-fi staple. Guys on surf flying,
something of a hoverboard, right? Yeah. We got Back to the Future. Back to the Future, I bet, had more to do with those.
Probably
it was Back to the Future and the speed
part
or bike
two hadn't come out yet.
From Jedi.
And they come out of an 87.
Part two is in 89.
Oh,
was
shit. It?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Back to the Future. Oh, God, Master of the Universe.
Oh, shit.
So, if anything, it was just the speeder. I think it was the speeder bike.
No! No!
Jennifer! Why? No. Okay. Yeah, I'm just looking at it as influences, you know.
Right.
Like the more current sci-fi films, I guess.
Yeah.
And I guess Back to the Future could be influenced by it, but I don't think so.
Probably not. But I think the speeder bike. Like I said, I think this movie is Jedi influenced. It's all Jedi influenced. It's got the Emperor. It's got...
They throw Skeletor down a hole. Or
that's
down
just...
A whatever.
But come on, that's the 80s way to kill anybody.
Yeah,
I can't claim that's necessarily... Star Wars. I mean, that's
it. Felt
that's
very
Die
Star
Hard.
Wars.
That's Joker.
It felt
that's
Star
fucking.
Wars.
That's everyone, though. Everyone.
It's just because it's a guy in a cloak going down a like an industrial
a shaft.
Tube.
Yeah,
a shaft.
The kids don't have to see it.
Yeah,
it's the green screen.
It's
just
a PC way of getting rid of your. It's PC is what it is. Because Superman 2 even had the Kryptonians lose their powers and try to fly, and like fall into the mist.
Yeah.
It's like you just get rid of them. You don't got to think about
I'm
it.
Saying,
it's a way of erasing.
It's because
them out
the villain has had his rise and fall.
Ooh.
Yeah, I don't. I think I
that's
even,
symbolism.
I was probably in my 20s before I actually saw like a person actually hit the ground in a film.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like it didn't happen. Like
no,
there'd be a
fall.
Bridge.
But didn't Die Hard kind of have like? The camera followed him down.
Yeah, but you didn't actually see him.
Yeah, like it's covered up by...
I thought maybe you saw like a bounce. Like
I think it's covered up by...
There's like a van or something, right?
Yeah, there's something in front of the camera, so you don't actually see the impact.
Right. I thought you didn't see the impact, but I thought you saw like him disappear, but then like pop up for a second like he might have bounced. But
I don't know.
Years.
Yeah,
I need to watch that hard again.
Well, it's at the end of the movie that they end up going back to Eternia, finally, to face off against the now upgraded Skeletor.
Which they find out by a new
design at this point. He gets like some armor.
I love that fucking
he gets to
scene
fight.
Because, well, like I said, he gets the sword, which the whole movie almost really
Skeletor.
Should have been about I need He-Man's sword to open the eye to the cosmos.
Right. That's what we find out in this scene.
Yeah, he just puts the sword in a thing.
Yeah.
And he's like, finally,
I have the power of Grayskull.
Oh, dude, the scene when the thing finally starts filling him. I mean, that to me, that is like, this is how I really fell in love with this movie. It's just the scene of the eye opening and like the weird, like gold, like 80s fucking like like whatever you call it, like the paint.
The painted on special the effects. Painted on like, special effects. Misty, like, whatever.
Light, whatever the light. Energy, whatever. Deal, yeah. And he's talking about how, like, I can feel the cosmos flowing throughout me. Ah, this is power! 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 And he says, like, what he says, you are no longer my equal. You are nothing to me. You are all nothing to me. And he's, like, looking at almost, I mean, it's looking at the villains. And I've always liked it in a movie when other villains are looking at the main villain like, ah, fuck, you know, like
that seems to happen a lot in this movie.
And I think that's awesome. I think that's a cool. I just always liked it because it gives the villains some depth. Because even though, I mean, they're out for their own fucking good, but it still makes them at least somewhat conscious, I helped, you know, this thing that could ultimately be bad for all of us and not just.
There's many times it seems like Evil-Lyn is trying to seek Skeletor's favor, and like he just keeps shutting her down. Like, and she looks disappointed a lot. You know, like, oh, I thought I was getting brownie points.
But that's why, as soon as shit starts happening, she's like, trigger the retreat. I mean, she knows she's ready to like wrap up and almost take over the army for him.
But she's into him when he gets all that power. Like, there's those scenes where she's like, oh yeah, like I don't know if it's just, you know, like strictly like a sexual, you know, attraction or what.
Well, people with the power. Fact that you want people with power. That's the attraction, period.
Yeah.
Fucking rule attorney.
Well, one thing I would like to say about the ending is finally He-Man has something to do. Because I noticed as we've been talking, about the Eternians and Skeletor and so-and-so and Skeletor and so-and-so and Skeletor.
Well, he's the man.
So there's this guy called He-Man in this movie. He shows up and has a sword fight at the end with Skeletor and he wins.
Oh, it's the worst sword fight in the world. Saves the day. Worst sword fight in the world.
They should have ended it with, I have the power. Like, that should have been the end of the fight.
That always was a magical moment to me, though. You give me a little bit of something from the show like that, where he grabs the sword, especially after
he glows.
When Skeletor's like, no, and he's like electrocuting him so he can't get the sword, and he's like trying to get it and pulls it out. And, oh, I have the power.
See, I used to think that, but nowadays I think that is just a cheap callback, and they're just, you know, reverse engineer the film to get to those moments.
Yeah.
And but sometimes that's cool, everyone. Though. Sometimes you're not giving it right to them. It's just like in the first Ninja Turtles movie. How Splinter gave him cowabunga at the end because they didn't want a whole movie. They're trying to show you almost like a beginning point, even though not to say that this was a beginning point of I have the power or not like that. Because he's already been He-Man this whole point. The only reason he would say I have the power is to become He-Man, right?
Right.
Well, but, you know, he just did that for like a fucking, I don't even know, a power-up or I don't even know. I just like Skeletor's line after that where he's like, yes, this will be our final battle. It's like, yeah.
Yeah,
that, final battle.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Skeletor.
And then for some reason, the second unit director turned off all the lights in the in the large throne room they built, and just had like red lights flashing.
And cleared out the room.
Cleared out the room.
It
was like back on weekends.
They ran out of finance.
Dude, Gary Goddard on the audio commentary. The fucking Gary Goddard. The director.
Hey, you said we weren't gonna.
I know that motherfucker. I was gonna say the pedophile. Fuck. Talks about how, like, he was just like, oh, jeez. Like, he was so disappointed with, like, what the fuck? Like, he, like, but once again, it's like, oh, well, you're the director. Shouldn't you have planned out their fight at the end? Because that's why they built, if you would look in the throne room, there's all these stairs. Like, oh, I mean, they built all these stairs for when they have their final sword fight at the end. They'd be going up and down these stairs and all this shit. And they just turned off all the lights and just had a fight. And it's like, it's the fucking worst fucking fight at the end of a movie in the world. Except for the Eye of the Power, and this will be our final battle. It ends right there.
For a movie predicated on a character with a sword, the sword play in this movie leaves something to be desired.
Yeah.
I do want to, before we wrap up, we do, there is a little coda scene where the two puppy lovers get transported back to Earth, back in time, to before the time that her parents got on that plane.
Well, I like that because...
So she can change the future.
Gwildor says it, but they don't really, like... They don't agree on it. Like,
yeah, I can send you back in time.
At any point in time, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And so like, it's we don't need anything from you.
And it's really cool the way they handle it, because right before they get sent back through the portal, they show Courtney Cox going... Wait, Grendor, send us through... You know, or something like that.
She does try to, like,
she says something... and he gets it, obviously.
Yeah. But then they wake up and your parents are
still. It's magical. Magical. It's a magical ending.
It's magical. It's like a dream ending.
It's the day before they go on the trip.
It's almost like they wrote the movie as if they went to Eternia for the whole movie and they came back to a dream, but they did it only in the last 5 minutes. I love it.
Yeah. Well, and it's also the Back to the Future ending, you know.
You come
downstairs and everything's different, and or you can change.
Right,
you know,
back here,
you can change.
Back in old 1980.
There's a very heavy, Spielbergian. What,
did you hit your head?
1985.
It's like a faux Spielbergian, fall over the entire movie. Oh, and there is a post-credit scene where Skeletor's, comes out of the goop and I will be back.
Like rushing through this.
Because we're there.
Come on, how many times have we went through? Come on, give me a break. because they give him that little thing. That little thing that's like, I'll remind you of Eternia or whatever the fuck. And when, she runs out of the house with her parents' keys to the plane, which of course, so they got to go through senior year again? Is that what this is saying?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
And, but when they meet up and he whips out, he's like, we were there. Eternia.
It's the Wizard of Oz ending.
What I did finally realize. They wrote this ending as if they were an eternity of the whole movie, and it was like a dream that her parents had ever died, or and it just never
And it kept getting rewritten and rewritten down.
Or something like
you know what?
That.
We can't. No. How about we just set this on the street?
They go to Earth. Let's put some boxes over here. I've always wanted like in my lifetime, I've always wanted to direct a fight scene in a warehouse back lot with a gate, a bunch of wood pallets, and some boxes for your bad guys, the fallen guys. It's like, oh, this is brilliant.
Yeah, that's all you need.
Everywhere.
Did you know there was a Masters of the Universe 2 planned? You probably know this. But canon, somehow, it all fell apart. It ended up, they built sets for it.
Really?
They were going to do it. It became Cyborg, the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie.
You know, I've always heard, weird things about that, about how, shit, yeah,
so Cyborg. Apparently, there's some part of Cyborg is the plot of Masters of the Universe 2. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah. Canon eventually ran out of money sometime in the early 90s, late 80s. Yeah.
Got ran out of money.
Yeah. There's a documentary now, I think, about canon films that I want to check out and see.
I really want to see them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we got Igor.
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
All right, thanks, Igor. So this is Mailbag. Here we go. Comments on our Facebook page, which you can comment on our Facebook page. Facebook.
That's what it sounds like after a few Shiner bags.
Facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. Every Thursday, we'll tell you what we're watching next week. You comment. We'll read your comments on the air. Gary, who is not here tonight due to illness, writes in, sorry for missing the show. I was looking forward to it. So in my absence, I put the following question to you gentlemen. How does this movie rank in the pantheon of cartoon adaptation movies?
Wow. Okay.
Oh,
so
man,
cartoon adaptation.
I would call it better than the Transformer movies.
Yeah, definitely better than Transformer.
The modern day Transformer.
I actually
movies.
Like the first Transformer.
Go
like,
to hell, Todd.
No.
Just right now.
Definitely better than the G.I. Joe movie.
I like the second G.I. Joe movie.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it. I don't know. I guess I
could. Yeah, it's got the Rock and Bruce Willis. That was actually I had low expectations, I guess. Low.
All right, should we round robin this?
I mean, I just think it's, almost all 80s cartoon movies are fucking horrible. I mean, they just are. The ideas and concepts are bigger than the budgets and the, they just are. It just takes a lot. I mean, that's why all these things like Transformers, He-Man, most of them, to me, really survive on concept design. It's all about the concept design and just like I mean, it is the artwork. It's not necessarily the plot. It's not the fucking character, you know.
I think the only one that really surpasses it is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Well, fucking A, right, dude?
The original.
But that's just because I think that shit, like, derives more than just 80s cartoon shit.
So then we're saying this is mid-grade or lower? It's up there.
I would say
let's give it. They're all down below 3 out of 10.
Yeah, it's pretty low.
They're all about.
Yeah, they're pretty low.
Yeah, who else do we got?
Stephanie Pax writes in: this movie rules. Good journey.
Oh, good journey.
Good journey is how the Eternians say goodbye to each other.
They don't say goodbye. We never say goodbye.
Life is a journey with many open portals to another.
Life is a journey. Something.
Good journey, Stephanie.
Gary Lazich says his favorite quote in the middle of the battle is, "How do you feel, He-Man?" "Hungry," says Man-at-Arms.
I don't recall that. Do you recall that at all in the movie? I was actually looking for it in this movie since we read that. It's like, I didn't see it. Unless that's part of like a TV cut, like a TV maybe. Edit.
Gary, you may have to clarify.
You have to clarify it.
Because we just watched this on Blu-ray, which I assume is a theatrical cut, and I don't remember that.
Who says it to who?
It looks like he's saying, He-Man says, "How do you feel?" to Man-at-Arms, who says "hungry," which would be in keeping with the joke that was set up earlier.
I think that comment happens, I think it would happen in the first ambush battle before they go to Earth.
Maybe
because the first thing that they do.
But I was actively looking for. Well, when after he wrote that,
when they're at the
that.
When they're at the music store, He-Man says, "I think they're angry with us," right? And then Man-at-Arms says.
Yeah, they must have missed us or something.
Yeah.
They must have missed us.
Yeah.
I don't know. That must be a TV edit. We got to look at that.
Yeah.
So.
And the last.
We got a pros here.
From Nick Hammond, who's a sometime contributor, frequent listener, sometime contributor. As an 80s baby, I grew up with Motu. Oh, he's got the Motu.
Motu!
And had everything from every toy ever made to my underoos decked out in He-Man. So he's saying he's a fan. Even when it was relaunched in the early 2000s, I collected every toy in that line.
Shit.
If I had a lot of money, I would even collect the collector's figures that Mattel sells online.
They're awesome.
Wow.
And hard to get.
So he's like really, really into...
MattyCollector.com. Really hard to get.
Does he still have them?
I don't know. I'll have to ask. Well, Nick, do you still have
them? From him.
But yeah. I will never, ever, ever, ever associate this abortion of a movie to the Motu. Horrible acting, storyline, and costuming killed this for me. The only thing that did come out of this was a pretty sweet Blade figure.
Blade, like I said, people fucking love Blade, right? Weird.
I guess so. Blade. My kids absolutely love the old cartoons and watch them over and over, but I will not let them watch this movie so they do not get subjected to this atrocity.
Sounds like a lot of first world problems. This movie's not that bad.
We appreciate all your comments. Yours too, Nick. And keep them coming. Facebook.com/Saturday.
And I don't think the acting's bad in this movie at all. I mean, the material is what it is.
We should find out about that in your wrap-up. Wrap-ups?
Well, I don't get to
do my wrap-up. Why not? Oh, okay. Sorry. That's right. Brent starts.
How in the hell am I going to follow Nick's? I mean, that's... Okay. Yeah. I'll try. So this movie is something. It's a movie. It's an 80s... It's definitely a product of the 80s. What it feels like to me is somebody that saw early 80s films and... saw He-Man and said, why not put the two together and make a movie out of it? But at the same time, they had some real talent behind it. I don't know. I mean, obviously, like Frank Langella.
Langella. No.
I mean, this is a guy that brings your movie up. You know, he adds a star to the film just being in it, which really helps this film because it needed a star. It's without him, it's a teeny bopper romp around, wrapped around a fish out of water story, or it should be a fish out of water story, but it's not. Thor is a better representation of this film. That said, it's.
You know, but I bet if Thor's three friends were with him, this would have been the movie, right? Well, if his three friends went with him to Earth, it would have been this.
It just feels like they're so accepting of Earth. Like, okay, this is the way it is.
I think they're just accepting of interdimensional travel. Like, maybe. They're really just, we got to get our bearings, just get our key and get back to Eternia.
Yeah, you could be right. Yeah, yeah, and maybe they've had more experience.
They don't even bother asking what dimension they're in.
Yeah,
they know the NATOs look like them.
That could be. I mean, anybody that has time portals, they're not really worried about it. Or that's what we're saying.
I mean, this movie was made by Californians that don't understand the Midwest anyway, because there was just a cow wandering around next to a chicken joint. Like, that's what happens in the Midwest. We just have cows wandering.
In the forest.
Yeah, in the fucking... Yeah.
And I really think they could have tied that in with the ribs and the, you know, the meat.
Right,
like,
right.
Like, oh, that was a cow? Oh, gross.
What a hideous cry! I love that character.
That's like, good. Yeah. What a hideous
cry. Yeah. He makes that movie. It's weird.
Okay, so watching it, I was feeling like, okay, this movie I've seen, right? Like everything from the late 80s, early 90s, whatever. I've seen it. But this movie took a turn and totally redeemed itself with which Travis mentioned earlier when the plot thickens and you find out that Evelyn has, you know, she finds the picture of the parents and the, you know, she takes over the persona of the mom. Like that shit is pretty, like that's heavy duty.
Yeah.
Like I wasn't expecting it. Like it was, you know, I mean, it took
How many other movies do you remember where someone assumes someone's identity?
Nightmare on Elm Street movies kind of did
this. Yeah, right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's always creeps me out.
It felt
that's
like
because it's a creepy thing when someone could do that.
But it didn't feel creepy to me. It felt tender because like you have been watching this film where Courtney Cox's character is talking about how, you know, she lost her parents and then all of a sudden here's this character using that against her.
Yeah.
And the way they shoot it, it's like this kind of slow motion, weird, you know, fantasy thing that you're watching in the midst.
Yeah, it's almost like her own mindset, right? Yeah. It's her own moment in time. It's like, it's like magic.
Yeah.
It's
definitely magic. I mean, like that's the moment in the film where like it's like, holy shit, like this, I didn't expect this from this movie. And they totally nail it. I mean, I feel for Courtney Cox leading up to it. I really feel her for her in that moment, and it makes Evelyn that much more evil.
Yeah.
For, you know, just going there. I know she's not human and I'm placing human tendencies towards her. Like, how can somebody be that, you know, cruel? But anyhow, she goes there and it's effective and the movie plays out. And then wouldn't you know it, right at the last like 5 minutes, she says something in the portal. Courtney Cox yells something. Wait, you know, send me back to this time. We think it is. And then she wakes up like Marty McFly. She comes downstairs and her parents are alive. I mean, you're watching this film where her parents are dead and she's devastated the whole film. And then you find out that her parents are alive at the end. And it's a special moment in the film. And it makes this film that much better, I think. So long story short, it surprised me in places. Without all that, it's still a fun film. So I liked it for that. The acting is atrocious. Except for Frank.
That's crazy.
But
Woman at Arms.
Okay.
She was great in this movie. Tila was great in this movie.
There's just not enough of them.
She was attracted to.
Like the main characters aren't bringing it.
There's so many characters though. That's what I'm saying. Main characters.
There's a lot.
All the characters, they all have, they're separate.
There's a lot.
This is trying the whole Avengers Guardians thing way before. You know?
It feels a lot like
all
that.
These people together and like having an adventure.
And that's what they used to do.
And this movie's
in the 50s
like, I mean, it, I'll get.
Okay. I would recommend it. Surprise, surprise. Check it out. Watch it.
Like as a kid, I really liked the He-Man stuff. And then when I was in my 20s, I decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to watch this He-Man. Heard bad things about the He-Man Masters of the Universe movie, but I'm going to sit down and watch it and watch it. Man, it's fucking terrible. Oh.
Motherfucker.
And
you just had to put the fucking in there. You could have said terrible.
So now that you've reappraised it.
So yeah. Now years, and but then see, also, you know, a couple years ago, I sat down and watched He-Man again.
He-Man.
And I'm like, whoa! This is awful.
The cartoon.
The cartoon. You can't go back to it. You know, it's like, you know, when I was playing with my toys and you like as kids when they're playing with He-Man toys and they're coming up with these crazy, just weird, you know, how kids come up with weird storylines. They're probably better than the storylines that the creators of the TV show actually came up with. Because they're wacky. Because, like, Skeletor is doing dumb shit. And, you know, so you approach this movie. And the movie is, it's low budget. It's He-Man. It starts off, I think it starts off really cool, set in Eternia. And then, you know, I mean, I didn't really care for Frank Langella's, like, the actual Skeletor, like, makeup, but, you know, whatever. He actually does, like, a good job. He's kind of like, you know, he puts a lot of effort into it. Unlike Dolph. Dolph Lundgren does a terrible job. I mean, just terrible. But, this movie kind of reminds me of, like, Italian fantasy. Like the glut after Conan came out when they were just kind of coming out with stuff and like you're like you know you got like Call the
Beastmaster
like Call is probably like Call. The best so it's like if you
no you mean Crawl
so yeah. So like if you put Crawl against He-Man Masters of the Universe which was Masters better, you probably would say Crawl because it's more original. But
no, Kroll,
got the glaive.
Kroll was the third movie of Conan that they just couldn't finance, so they put
Kroll.
Kroll and Kroll. Jesus, yeah. God, we can't talk about that. I confused Kroll and Kroll. It's all the R.
Kroll.
Kroll. I need to see that again, actually. Kroll. I remember the starfish fucking throwing deck.
Yeah, so
the glaive.
That's yeah, the glaive. Yeah.
That's what it's called, the glaive?
The glaive.
I'll explain that to a
people. So it's on those levels of like what are some of them?
Sword and the Sorcerer.
Sword and the
Sorcerer. Yor, the Hunter from the Future.
Yor. There's gore. Probably a Gore. I want to see the Gore movies, there's dude. Two gore. Well, I want to read those books.
Yeah.
I mean, all this. So, I mean, sci-fi. I mean, Sword and Sorcery was from fucking like probably like what like 72 to like. Like heavy from 72 to like maybe like 86.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
I mean,
so this movie falls into that category, but it has it falls into those categories of like those Italian just movies, but it has a license to it. It has the He-Man name attached to it and characters that you kind of know. So on that level, it kind of puts it like maybe ahead of some of the pack of like, you know, maybe ahead of some of the gores, you know, probably ahead of Sword and Sorcery.
I don't know. There was multiple gores, though. This made one movie. There was multiple gores. At least three gores.
Sword and the Sorcerer is not very good.
Wait. You're saying just having the license elevates it above those other movies?
Well, plus the storylines, like the acting and the storyline is in the budget. Is a little bit better than some of those. I personally...
That's probably because, like, lower-end Hollywood is still, like, high-end Italian.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, by a long shot.
Yeah, exactly, so, by a long shot.
So, I mean, like, if Italians I kind of just like, wish... Like, I kind of just... I wish the movie was entirely set in turning it, taking it to Earth, just fucking ruins it for me. That's like my main complaint against the movie. I kind of wish there's, you know, do I recommend it?
Dramatic pause.
Yeah, Jesus Christ, yeah. Tom. Fucking recommend it or not?
Waiting on pins and needles.
You probably.
That's a default yes. We're going to college.
I mean, like, if you put it like it's like, hey, compare it to like the G.I. Joes or the Transformers.
Don't compare
or,
it to those. Just
but if you were just if it's on par with that. So yeah, sure.
It's better than Battleship.
Wow.
It's better than Battleship. I mean, it's but there's worry. Could have worse times.
I'm shocked that you actually recommend it. I thought that was going to go like that was going to be rough.
You can have worse times.
Yeah. I mean, there's no defending this as a good movie, I don't think. I mean, so, like, we have to preface that by saying, like, but, you know, if you're going into this and they're like, these guys are recommending this, I'm going to check it out. You're like, you know.
That wasn't good at all.
Right. You have to be, if you're a connoisseur of schlock, right? Yeah, this is kind of where we're at.
It's a fun movie.
Yes. If you are a connoisseur of schlock, then there is a lot to like about this movie. I mean, it's, you know, got this really weird budget level where it's higher than, you know, like Travis was saying, it's low-level Hollywood. But it's not indie. I mean, they have money. I mean, enough to build this throne room set. And at least, you know, there's laser effects and there's, you know, creature makeups and stuff like that. I mean, it still just feels like they went cheap only because you know that there's a source material that takes place in this fantasy world. So it's like if you strip the license off of this movie and just look at it, like, this is the movie, right? We don't have any backstory from these cartoons because I think... If you do look at that, then I think that this is a failed adaptation of the source material. I think the kids who, you know, were the age to see this movie saw the cartoon and went expecting that in the movie and was like, what in the fuck? This is nothing like what I'm here for, right? So it's like, okay, let's just throw that out. Let's just look at the movie itself. Then I think you've got, you know, I mean, you've got like this level of Hollywood cheese, you know, from like the late 80s. You've got, you know, goofy lines. I don't think that the actors are necessarily... bad.
None of them are bad at
well,
all.
Well, I think Dolph Lundgren is bad.
He's Dolph Lundgren. He's like any action star. He worked out as much as he needed.
I think he is a non-actor. He is a physical presence, you know. Or Dolph Lundgren's always been bad. If God didn't make Dolph Lundgren, then someone would have to go make him to play He-Man. You know, I don't know. But he looks the part. That's why you hire him. Because like. You know, what's the character like? Who cares? This is a muscular, gut blonde dude. He's He-Man. He-Man barely has anything to do in his own fucking movie, which is kind of odd, but I think we pretty much cleared that tonight as we're talking about the synopsis. It's like he's there, but there's nothing to this character. Okay, that being said, right?
Do we know why Arnold never became He-Man? Schwarzenegger?
Conan? He was more successful.
Yeah, he's more successful at this time. Yeah. This is already Predator days.
Yeah, almost. By 86 or 87, yeah, Predator. He was making Predator.
Wasn't this a big deal, though?
If Arnold would have made this movie,
it'd be about as big a deal maybe as, like, you know, the G.I. Joe series is today.
Who knows?
It's like, really? You're making G.I. Joe, you know?
Yeah. Even the audience back then probably saw how, like, cheap of an effort it was.
Oh, they did. Know? I remember the reviews. They were like, this cheap piece of shit with like blah, blah, blah. I think a lot of the stuff that we're crediting to the actors being bad is not necessarily the fault of the actors. Because I'm looking at them and they're like, they're doing what they can to like, you know, I think in James Tolkien's, you know, he's overacting to compensate for there not being a whole lot written to his character. Robert Duncan McNeil, whatever. He's like acting as best as he can. It's just there's nothing, you know, really. They all have like there's a flaw in the script. Of the script is like it's written at a kind of a junior high level. We were talking during the movie about there's chronons and parsecs and
it's different types of like. Well, there's sci-fi all this, like, time.
Well, sci-fi jargon that like these movies and like the certain Star Trek things like throw all this stuff in there, and you're like, what in the fuck are you talking about? This is just like, you know, it's just sci-fi nerd stuff, right?
That they just alphabet soup
that they loaded the script with. I think Langella, you know, again, I think he's in a different movie, and I think you know a lot of it rests, a lot of success rests on his shoulders. I remember a guy was interviewing him for I think it was Frost Nixon when he was in that. And the interviewer was like, you know, okay, we've interviewed you about Frost Nixon, blah, blah, blah. It's very serious. And then at the end of it, he was kind of like, okay, so before I let you go, I just want to ask you about, you know, like there's, you know, you've done other stuff in your life and I'm a big fan. And Frank Langella's like Skeletor. And he's like, how'd you know? He's like, well, you're about the age. Like that really went over it. And they started talking seriously about his performance in Masters of the Universe. He's like, oh yeah, I love that part. Like, not ashamed of it. He's like, I loved playing Skeletor. And like, explain. It's on YouTube. So
I gotta watch that.
That's
good.
But like years later, he knew the, you know, still held that part, that experience, I guess, close to his heart. So
he knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, he does very well. I mean, the movie's his to walk away with, you know.
Yeah.
Beyond that, we have, Richard Edlund did the special effects. I mean, he did Ghostbusters and stuff like that. I mean, like, so they weren't it wasn't like super low budget where we couldn't afford to do anything. They were hiring like the best
people. They had the best people. They just didn't. Yeah. They couldn't do what they could do.
Right. But I mean, they got Bill Stout. You know, they got Mobius.
Mobius did costume design.
Yeah. So they were hiring like these good people, you know, to do all this stuff. So it's not like there's a deficit of, you know, craftsmen involved in this. It's just, it's a lot of effort directed at this thing, which is, as Brent, I think, said, it's like when you're watching it, you feel like you're watching the greatest hits of like 80s, you know, fantastical, yeah. you know, like sci-fi genre films. Yeah. It's like this has all, you know, the music comes from this place. This theme comes from, you know, this part of the movie comes from here. The wardrobe comes from here. The sets come from here. You know, this part of the plot comes from here. So it's, I think, you know, I had fun watching it tonight. You know, it's like I wasn't bored and I didn't dislike it. There was no part where I was like, this is fucking stupid and I just want this to be over. It was just kind of, I was amused, you know, through the entire thing. Maybe not in the way the filmmakers intended, but,
well,
you
maybe.
Know, I mean, it's right. as a schlocky, you know, Saturday night freak show experience. I think this delivered, this foot the bill, and I would recommend it.
I want to go back to what Colin was talking about with the villains, because, I mean, to me, almost what makes any superhero or fantasy or it's always the villain. You give a fucking villain for a guy to rise up and fight against, it makes the whole movie. Imagine all three Star Wars movies without Darth Vader. They'd be fucking shit. You'd have a whiny blonde kid. It's just one of those things where it's like you need a villain more than anything. You need to feel like, oh my God, these guys have so much going against them, you know? And that's why I do think this movie works, because I almost think people understood, like, fuck, maybe Skeletor was this fucking hero of Masters of the Universe, the cartoon show. You know, maybe Skeletor did overshadow He-Man, because he's such a fucking cool villain. I mean, Joker, I think, overshadows Batman. I mean, there's a lot of villains, I think, overshadow their heroes just because they're so fucking cool. So when you're writing a script, like, look at Tim Burton's Batman. That's a Joker movie. Mm-hmm. It's not a Batman movie. That's a Joker movie. And I think that's what we really had in the 80s. We had great villains for these heroes to go up against. And I think this movie utilized that to, like, the best of its fucking ability. I do wish there was some more, I mean, especially when it comes to sword fighting and shit you're talking about. It's like, yeah, there could definitely be way more shit that's fantasy, but I think they go towards, you know, I mean, they're still trying to put a lot of different elements in it. Because, I mean, when people say, like Nick Hammond here said, it was a bad ad, it's like, no, go watch, I mean, well, you said he watches the originals with his kids. It's like, dude, fucking watch those, man. This is not a bad adaptation, dude. Everybody's buffoonish, they can't fight for shit. Nothing's really that detrimental. It's all about like,
well, bad adaptation is that it doesn't take, it's not that.
It's just a different adventure. It's not that. You're just watching a different adventure that happens to go to Earth or whatever. It's the same fucking thing. Like I guarantee you can take the same script and just animate it the way He-Man looks, it would fucking be, it'd be fine. Just the fact that this doesn't look like He-Man the way we know it is what gets in the way of this fucking movie. Other than that, it's exactly like a fucking Masters of the Universe movie. And, I mean, yeah, the big detrimental thing about the movie is the idea that, like, all the cartoons were written without continuity, so the show has no continuity, therefore the characters have no fucking continuity. Like in the show, the sorceress is Teela's mother. But at the end of the episode, they had to wipe her mind of it. That way they could play episodes out of continuity you can't say sorceress is Teela's mother and then have episodes where she has no idea, because they didn't care about continuity back then. They wanted to play cartoons just out of order and whatever the fuck. And, you know, they don't even mention it in this movie, you know, let alone that man at arms is her father or whatever the fuck.
I think they did mention that.
They mentioned that in this movie. Yeah, they did. But yeah, it's just another weird thing that's like, yeah, He-Man almost has no continuity just because the type of show, in a weird way, God damn it, in a weird way, I think that's a strength in a weird way. Because I think that's what ruins in adult entertainment is our strict compliance to continuity, to where when you're a child. And, like, when I picked up my first Superman comic book, I didn't care what number it was. I didn't care. I knew Superman. I knew Superman lived in Metropolis with Lois and fought Luthor and Brainiac. But, like, all this shit of, like, continuity wasn't so fucking important. When you get older, you gotta know, well, everything has a beginning, and there's a genesis to a story, and da-da-da-da-da. But when I think you're a kid, you're a little bit more open to just like, who's that guy? I like how he looks. You know, who's Spider-Man? I like how Spider-Man looks. What's he do? What's his power? You really want the basics of a character. You don't really need, like, when you're an adult, you ask for a lot more. You ask for, well, what's his, you know, what's his intentions? What's his, you know, like, you know, what drives him as a character? But as a kid, you're really looking at face value in a way. Like, what's he look like? What are his powers? Like, what is he, you know, really simple things. And, I don't know, I love this movie. Like I said, when I was a kid, you know, I got to a point when I was about, I started weeding out a lot of the, either really cultish or like childish things I liked when I was around 16 or 17, just realizing like, fuck, I've seen this so many times in my life and I've grown up out of it. And this was one of those movies I put away so many fucking times. Like, I'm sick of it. But, like, man, once a year, just, like, it just hit. Like, I had to fucking watch it, man. I had to see those Skeletor scenes. I had to hear him be like, when Evil-Lyn says, finally, after all this time, Grayskull is ours. And he goes, no! Mine. It's like, fuck, yeah, it's yours. He's a fucking awesome villain, dude. Awesome. Almost like the same way. Like, if I think of Richard Donner's Superman, dude, I think of Luthor's lines. I think of everything Gene Hackman says in that movie. I don't think of shit Superman says. Hackman, Luthor's the fucking star of Superman the movie. He just is. He's got all the charisma because the villain, I mean, I do think Hollywood takes more to the villains because the villain, heroes can only react to a villain. A villain gets to actually have things he wants to do, and he goes out and fucking does it. He's an active character, right? Mm-hmm. A hero can only fucking
react.
Exactly. You know, so
unless you're He-Man,
unless you're He-Man. But He-Man was sharing the screen with fucking four other people: Teela, Man-at-Arms, and Gwildor. Let alone Courtney Cox, the cop, and there's a lot of characters in this fucking movie. Yes. You know. But I don't know. I mean, I think they did fine, really, because I think they're trying to build more of a team dynamic. It wasn't necessarily, this is a He-Man movie. It was a team effort. So I fucking love this movie. Everybody should watch this movie. Everybody should make their children watch this movie. I don't know. Just don't think too hard. That's what you got to do. It's like, this is one of those movies, just fucking don't think too hard. Because, yeah, there's not a lot there. There's not like, but it's one of those things where, like, watching this movie, future generations could actually like work on like, fuck, what is the actual Shakespearean like way that this movie would go? Cause I actually like Hasbro has figured out like how like there was some hero named Ragnar, some shit that was the original bearer of the power of Grayskull. So they have like a lineage where the power of Grayskull comes from. And like, so there should be some big epic thing. And I guess it matters to some people or whatever. There's a comic book now that's been running for about 3 or 4 years from DC, just because DC or Time Warner, whoever the fuck you want to say, owns all the characters, or at least has rights to them. And so, yeah, you could think really in depth about it, but I think this is the sort of thing where we were talking about like artistic movies where, oh, you put so much in there. This is the type of thing where I think, like, yeah, you look at a guy with a skull face, and like you said, oh, if you think of it, it's like, oh, it's a thin skin that, like, you know, you can just start to add this shit to it that, like, yeah, might not be there, but in fantasy's open to adaptation and change and whatever, because, I mean, that's the only, I mean, like, movies like Buffalo 66, they ain't making for 40 years, but He-Man, they keep tweaking and changing and, like, you know,
there apparently is a writer assigned to the reboot to do it again.
Does Joel Silver still own the rights?
I don't know. I heard
Joel Silver had the rights.
For Buffalo 66?
Yes.
Buffalo 66.
Coming back. No,
the remake, the prequel.
Yeah. So that's a recommendation then.
Yeah, to the highest.
All right, so that's Masters of the Universe on the Saturday Night Freak Show. Next week, it's going to be Gary's pick, and he's not here tonight, but he sent along his pick. We're going to be watching State of Grace, an Irish mobster movie, which I haven't seen. I don't know if you guys have.
Gary.
So that's next week. And as always, you can find our past episodes on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Castroller, Podbay, Player FM, and many more, wherever podcasts are given away for free, or on our website, which is SaturdayNightFreakShow.blogspot.com. And until next time, ladies and germs, the balcony is closed. The basement is shut down. The lights are going off.